A very good Friday. Welcome to this edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. Coming up in the show here today, we'll bring you feature agricultural news reports, and then we'll check in with national and regional agricultural news headlines as well. And we get started with regional agricultural news right after this.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit Phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
R. Keith Strigler, grower outreach specialist at E&J Gallo Winery, has been confirmed as the 2022 to 2023 president of the American Society for Enology and Viticulture. He succeeds Tom Collins of Washington State University. Prior to joining E&J Gallo Winery, Strigler worked as an outreach coordinator for the National Clean Plant Network and in various administrative research and extension positions at the University of Missouri, Missouri State University, University of Arkansas, and Fresno State University. He was raised on a family farm near Fayetteville, Arkansas, and has been a member of the ASEV since 1980 and has participated in numerous committees, including recently co-chairing the Unified Wine and Grape Symposium Program Development Committee in 2018 to 2020. He's also a board member of the National Grape Research Alliance. UC Davis PhD candidate Katie McVeigh wants to bring big data to the small farmer. She is a PhD in animal biology and has developed a customizable artificial intelligence platform called DairyFit to help dairy farmers get a better sense of what is happening in their herds. McVeigh combined biostatistics and machine learning into an algorithm platform where farmers can visualize data that is already being captured and analyze it to look for insights into behavior. DairyFit helps to pull out patterns hiding in big, messy data streams, she says. Then it lets a farmer decide the right management intervention. She wants to empower farmers with data and not replace them. McVeigh's work, which is the subject of her dissertation, is getting attention. Earlier this year, she won the Animal Health Plus Industry Award as part of the Big Bang Business Competition. She describes DairyFit as Big Brother for cows and says the technology can analyze data from sensors, ear tags, and other precision livestock farming technology that documents eating, chewing cud, walking, time at rest, and other behaviors. Mining that data can highlight patterns that can be difficult or time-consuming to observe in person. The platform can be used to audit operations to determine a number of things, including if cows are laying down enough, spending the right amount of time in the milking parlor, or if they have spent too much time on their feet. It can also detect shifts in behavior. The platform can be deployed for hundreds of cows, small herds, and individual animals, opening up the world of big data analysis to small farmers. One pattern that emerged during testing, researchers expected sick cows to walk into pens at the rear with the big powerful ones in front. What they found was the healthy cows led from the front and chased from the behind. Having that kind of intelligence can help manage herds. To that end, McVeigh has made the code public and is testing a platform with a small group of farmers and hopes to offer it as a smartphone app. The Big Bang Business Competition is organized by the UC Davis Mike and Renee Child Institute for Innovation and Entrepreneurship, which helps researchers develop and advance their ideas into business ventures via competition, workshops, mentoring, and networking opportunities. Prize funding comes from corporate, nonprofit, and other sponsors. Ag Processors Association President and Chief Executive Officer Roger Issam testified recently before the California Department of Insurance on the issue of expanding the FAIR program for insurance. The FAIR program is the insurance of last resort when operators cannot get coverage anywhere else. In recent years, many facilities have been unable to get insurance coverage for their property. This primarily as a result of the historic wildfires in California chasing insurance carriers away from the state, as well as losses in the agricultural industry. It has left many operations with limited coverage pieced together with multiple policies or in some cases without coverage on all or part of their property. The Ag Processors Association has been working closely with CDI to find solutions to this crippling dilemma. As a result, the state insurance commissioner has worked with the FAIR program to increase the commercial limit from $3 million to over $8 million in overall coverage. In testimony, Issam asked the commissioner to seek increases as high as $20 million. This would not cover all property that many members may have, but it would be a significant increase and help in the interim until more carriers come back to the California marketplace, according to Assam. The Ag Processors Association continues to put pressure on CDI and find solutions to help their members. The state of California took an important step towards approving the use of cleaner, lower-cost E15 by releasing the results of a multi-year study of the fuel's emissions impacts. The results of the study, which tested 20 vehicles, show that shifting from E10 to E15 reduces emissions of most pollutants that contribute to ozone formation and ultimately smog. California is one of only two states across the country that does not currently allow the sale of E15. Ozone-forming potential showed a decreasing trend for E15 compared to E10, indicating that the introduction of E15 in the California gasoline market will likely not contribute to increases in ozone formation, according to the study. The report also shows E15 significantly reduces emissions of particulate matter, which is another key ingredient in smog. The study, which was conducted by researchers at the University of California, Riverside, was supported by the Renewable Fuels Association, California Air Resources Board, U.S. Council for Automotive Research, and other ag organizations. Among the study's key conclusions, particulate matter showed strong statistically significant reductions of 16 to 54% for E15 compared to E10 across the fleet of 20 vehicles. Solid particulate number emissions were 12% lower for E15 than E10. Total hydrocarbon was significantly reduced by 5 to 6% for E15 compared to E10. For non-methane hydrocarbon emissions, E15 showed a 7 to 15% reduction compared to E10. Carbon monoxide emissions showed significant reductions of 12 to 27% for E15 compared to E10. Carbon dioxide tailpipe emissions had a reduction for E15 compared to E10. And fuel economy showed a reduction of just 1% for E15 compared to E10 across the fleet of 20 vehicles. The Federal Reserve Board released its July 2022 Beige Book Update, a summary of commentary on current economic conditions by the Federal Reserve District. The report included several observations pertaining to the U.S. agricultural economy. For the 12th District, which is California, conditions in the agriculture and resource-related sectors were mixed. Drought conditions in many areas adversely impacted the growing season, with some producers letting portions of their farms go fallow in order to prioritize water usage. Growers in the Pacific Northwest instead reported increased precipitation, with one producer expressing concern that colder weather would reduce crop yields. Farmers throughout the district reported increased international demand for both fresh and processed foods, but noted that a strengthening dollar dampens sales. One producer in the Northwest warned declining shipping rates could indicate decreasing food sales prospects, while a contact in the seafood sector reported only minor improvement in shipping conditions.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
Agricultural crops, including field crops and trees, experience a wide range of biotic and abiotic factors throughout the growing season that can hurt yield. For those abiotic factors, such as drought and sunburn, soil microbiology has the potential to assist in mitigation. But first, the difference between biotic and abiotic.
Abiotic stress factor is usually something that is non-living, something usually that's caused by the environment. And then you have your biotic stress factors, which are usually caused by something living. So those are your plant pathogenic fungi, bacteria, insects, viruses, rodents, pests, anything that's living can be categorized as biotic stress.
That was Cassidy Millian, Director of Ag Science at Helier Agriculture, who said that abiotic factors can differ depending on the location of the crop. However, they can generally be classified into four categories, the first being temperature.
So either excess heat, cold, or frost damage. Then you can look at water. So again, you can either have drought conditions or you can have excess water, looking at flooding. And then you get into UV or radiation, so either excess light or not enough light, and this can impact your photosynthesis. And then one that we all know pretty well is nutrients, either deficiencies, so lack of nutrients available, or toxicities. And usually when we look at toxicity, we're thinking something like heavy metal toxicity or salinity issues with salt stress. And then something that I think right now is interesting to look at is also the weather. In general, so wind stress, hail damage, all of that can fall into things that we often see across a growing stage here in the U.S.
One important place where the biotic meets the abiotic is at the microbiome level. Many backed scientific research efforts suggest that improving soil health and the microbiome can help reduce the effects of abiotic stressors on plants.
Soil health is key in having leveraging our soil microbiome and those bacteria and fungi to aid in reducing these stressors. It's specifically abiotic stress. So microbes are really neat in both, I'm talking here in broad fungi and bacteria. And we've seen this in numerous studies where we're able to see that we can leverage those to mitigate abiotic stress. So what they're able to do is kind of a three-pronged approach where they're able to, one, induce local or systemic stress within the plant. And they can do this by inducing changes in their phytohormone production. They can trigger defense-related proteins and enzymes in the plant. And also these bacteria are able to exudate osmoprotectants, as we talked last time, in that drought stress, and antioxidants, which help tell the plant, hey, there's stress coming, and it gives them time to change internally and react to that stress. They're also able to help the plant maintain their growth and development. So they do this through fixating and mobilizing nutrients within the soil and making them available for the plant to uptake. They also play a role in that hormones and produce the phytostimulant compounds to trigger plant growth. And lastly, I think is really important is microbes and fungi play that key role in improving soil health and your structure. And really when we're looking at nutrient mobilization and water, this is really important. So we touched on this last time, so I'm not going to get into it too much, but we know those bacteria excrete those EPS proteins, which help make those biofilms and hold water in the field. And also the fungi play a role in producing that hyphae, increasing that structure. So when we're talking about a drought stress, we talk about holding water for longer, but also in a flood, we're able to absorb that water a lot quicker. So with these multifaceted approaches that both fungi and bacteria can do, if we can leverage that, those microbes, and improve our soil health, this is a really viable option to help mitigate that abiotic stress.
Improving soil health can come in a couple ways, including improving the actual environment that the microbes live in the soil, or adding biological products to the soil. However, how does a grower know when their biological products are working and reducing those abiotic stressors? Millian says it comes down to knowing your field and what sort of stressors you typically see, and then giving it the eye test.
Knowing your crop, knowing when it's healthy, knowing when you're seeing an abiotic versus biotic stressor, being able to identify that. And then when you understand that whole holistic approach, you're able to then select, one, your fertility program to help if you have nutrient deficiencies, to look at adding in inoculants in these biologicals or carbon chemistries to help you mitigate the abiotic stress. So, I mean, there's lots of different options you have, from seaweeds and amino acids, looking at helping your activating plant growth and relieve stress. You have your humic and fulvic, which can aid in improving that soil structure, reducing nutrient leaching, and also helping that nutrient delivery to the plant. You obviously have your inoculants, so adding those bacteria and fungi back to the soil with that mineralization of your nutrients. And then you have your microbial foods, so you get into your microalgae, molasses, and sugars to actually help feed the native soil microbiome. So depending on what abiotic stresses you think you might be seeing in your field, it's really taking that holistic approach and trying to incorporate either one of these methods or multiple of these methods to achieve that. And the biggest thing is tracking it through the season. So knowing your field one, and then once you're adding them in, measuring it. So going back in the field, you see a reduction in those symptoms of your abiotic stressors. Just visually, I think is a good indicator, but also taking soil tests or tissue tests. If you know you have nutrient deficiencies, you know, are you moving that needle? And if you're looking at more of a soil health approach, trying to add inoculants or biostimulants in, there's multiple different tests that you can do depending on which approaches you're taking. And that's when you find your favorite agronomist and understand, you know, I want to achieve these goals, and they can help you pick those products and also the best timing of when to test them and how to understand those tests to see if you're able to change anything. And in the end, if you're taking that holistic approach from start to finish, I think you'll start being able to move that needle and seeing you're able to mitigate abiotic stress. But again, this doesn't happen overnight. So this is something from season to season. We hopefully will see little increments of improvement, but we're not going to see, you know, a complete 180 change overnight with that.
This is Taylor Chalstrom reporting for My Ag Life.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
USDA has lowered its forecast for this year's rice crop, but has raised the forecast for average prices. USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford.
Looks like U.S. rice growers are going to harvest fewer acres than last year, down by 180,000 acres, or about 7%. USDA Outlook Board Chairman Mark Chekanowski says most of that reduction, though, coming from a
pretty sharp cut in rice acreage in California, reflecting water shortages and restrictions on irrigation. So California is looking at the lowest acreage since 1958.
And nationally, average yields down from a year ago. Results of all that?
A pretty sharp reduction in overall U.S. production.
Down 9% from last year. So the probable market scenario for rice producers in this next year?
Tighter U.S. supplies, higher imports, lower exports, modest increase in ending stocks, but strong farm prices.
USDA projecting rice to average 1820 a hundredweight, up 240 from this past season. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
American Farm Bureau Federation is calling on USDA to take steps to ensure America's farmers continue to have access to crucial fertilizer supplies. AFBF submitted comments on USDA's request for information on access to fertilizer, competition, and supply chain concerns. In the filed comments, AFBF lists several factors that have combined to create shortages and drive up fertilizer costs, including the ongoing conflict between Russia and Ukraine, rising inflation, labor shortages, regulatory hurdles, and increased transportation costs. America's farmers are being called on to feed both America's families and families abroad as war and shortages take their toll on international neighbors. That, according to AFBF President Zippy Duvall, he says farmers and ranchers have answered the call before and they stand ready to do it again, but they need access to necessary supplies in a timely manner. Supply chain issues and inflation are not short-term problems, so he says we need long-term solutions, partnerships with USDA, and action across the federal government to ensure we can continue to meet growing demands of a hungry world. AFBF's recommendations include providing assistance to farmers to expand on-site farm fertilizer storage capacity to help them manage costs throughout the year, urging EPA to seek reforms to review processes that create barriers for domestic fertilizer production, modernize weight restrictions for trucks to reduce the number of trucks needed to transport goods, and enact rail reforms to promote rail competition, fair rates, and reliable service. A number of factors are sending up red flags about slowing economic activity and a potential oncoming recession. A CoBank report says inflation is the largest red flag, and the Fed is ready to raise rates until it believes inflation has been controlled. Warehouse and inventory costs are still rising at near peak levels, and transportation costs are rising at a much higher rate than before COVID-19, according to Dan Kowalski, vice president of CoBank's Knowledge Exchange. Grain rail car availability and prices were at multi-year lows and highs respectively in the second quarter. Shifting economic sentiments have brought ag and energy commodity prices down from their peaks. Grain prices in the second quarter remain volatile, but grain and oilseed prices should push higher because of tight global commodity supplies. There are challenges ahead because of dry July weather, and Asian-made crop protection chemicals will continue to be in short supply.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
California is home to the largest grower of fresh artichokes in the United States, Ocean Mist Farms. Since 1924, Ocean Mist Farms has worked tirelessly to help develop California's booming artichoke industry into what it is today. Chris Drew, president and CEO of Ocean Mist Farms, tells us a bit of history about artichokes and their place in the California agriculture industry.
Artichokes were originally brought to the state of California in the mid-1920s. Generally were brought by Italian immigrants coming from the Mediterranean and had brought new cultivars along with them. Much like many of the original crops in the state of California, some of the tree fruits that were brought in around that same time, artichokes were along with them. Originally, they were grown around the areas of South San Francisco, and as the demand for housing and land values increased, the growers continued to look for a favorable climate to cultivate the artichokes. So since the mid-1920s, the artichokes have really been growing around the San Francisco Bay, Half Moon Bay, and found their way to Castroville in the early 1920s. Ocean Mist was founded in 1924, on the principles of the artichokes and some of the other local vegetables at that time. And they've been farmed in this Castroville area, the artichoke center of the world, ever since.
While Castroville may be the artichoke capital of the world, there are two other ideal growing regions in the state that allow California to produce artichokes year-round.
California is the leading producer, and really the reason why it is because of the unique microclimates that we have throughout the entire year. We have multiple growing areas, and many of those areas are dictated by the way that the climate sets up during those particular seasons. So in the summertime, most artichokes come from the Castroville area or the artichoke center of the world, and that's due to the unique microclimate that we have. When the temperature swings roughly run between 58 degrees in the morning to 65 degrees in the afternoon, and that is our day-to-day temperature. As the winter time turns around and starts to turn cooler, we move our artichoke production into Southern California, where that climate is favorable to producing artichokes during the winter months of our growing season. And what we've done is really we grew and cultivated a perennial crop. So the artichokes that were originally brought to California in the mid-1920s were from rootstock, very similar to a peach or apple tree generated from rootstock. It's planted into a particular area or field for a long duration of time. Artichokes were very similar in nature, in which they were planted and grown and cultivated in that same spot. Today, we farm what we call an annual artichoke that is grown from seed and produces, and once the production is complete, we will then work that soil and plant additional crops in its space. So we've really transitioned from a perennial cropping system to an annual cropping system, which has allowed our retail partners and those artichoke aficionados out there to enjoy artichokes year-round, whereas in the past, they were seasonal. They were seasonally available.
For growers, adaptability is key, and Ocean Mist Farms has exemplified the importance of this characteristic for almost 100 years now.
Some of the challenges that we've had are water availability, differences in climatic conditions, differences in the varieties that we're growing, pest pressures, And as farmers, we're very adaptable. We have to operate with change in our back pocket because that's what we're faced with on a day-to-day basis. We can't control the weather. It's one of the major variables that we do depend on every day, but it can be changing from one day to the next. We have to be able to adapt, change our principles of growing to accommodate the plant and in the environment in which it's being growing to yield those artichokes for consumer demand.
Despite the challenges, Ocean Mist Farms continues to produce a quality crop for consumers across the country. Drew tells us more about the company's goals and how they'd like to see more consumers choose artichokes.
Our goals are to get artichokes into consumers' homes, onto consumers' tables that have never tried them before. Artichokes are a very unique vegetable, which is fun to eat, we say. Artichokes are fun to eat. So we really want to get artichokes into homes to consumers, shoppers that have never tried them before. Our goal is to de-intimidate the artichoke. Those that have never seen an artichoke before walking through the produce aisle may think to themselves that, you know, there's something there that they don't know what it is, and so they don't have the desire to pick it up or purchase it and bring it home for dinner. We really want to take the approach of making an artichoke consumer friendly. How can we deliver artichokes in a ready-to-eat format or something that's easier to prepare than the way that artichokes are cooked and eaten today? The artichokes generally can take quite some time to prepare, anywhere from 45 minutes sometimes to an hour, which can be very long, especially for somebody that's looking for convenience. And we have the desire to bring convenience to the artichoke lovers out there, something that's ready to eat, something that can take, you know, 15, 20 minutes to prepare, as opposed to waiting that long duration.
If you are not a current artichoke consumer, take this as your sign to give it a try and pick one up the next time you go to the grocery store.
Ocean Mist is a nearly 100-year-old company. We've been growing artichokes since the mid-1920s. We're artichoke professionals. That's what we're known for doing. And we want to reach out to all those consumers out there that have never tried an artichoke and ask them to get out and try something new today.
This is Kylie Harlan reporting for My Ag Life.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.